Get updated with the hottest news in insurance, finance, and the newest innovation in insurtech and fintech in these difficult times. Hear it from one of the most known and respected voices in the industry, Dr. Robin Kiera, and his guest of today.
Hey guys, this is Insurance and Finance Live from the headquarters of Digital Scouting in the rainy city of Hamburg, Germany. Today we have a very special guest. We have the CEO of Laka, Tobias Taupitz, here. And yes, he's German. And yes, we are still going to talk English because he has a super exciting, super German accent, super exciting story from Laka. Thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
I'm super excited and I cannot believe that we have not spoken earlier in this show with you. Why? Because there are a lot of topics in the insurance industry, a lot of things we all work on, but real true innovation I have not seen so far. In some cases, yes, but like the true one. One thing I saw for a long time is actually Laka, and I really mean it. You have seemed to have cracked the nut of making people fall in love with insurance. Can you share with us how did you crack that nut?
With pleasure. I hope I have a good story, and I also have a thick German accent, so I come with both, I'm sure. So Laka is first and foremost about business model innovation. We challenge the status quo that premiums need to be charged upfront. I think others have propagated quite well the conflict of interest in insurance, which we also believe exists. But in very simple terms, of course, taking money first, paying out later, that means one party is in the strong seat, customer always comes second. In our world, we don't want any of our customers' money. We onboard them, give them an insurance policy. At the end of the month, we add up all our claims, add a fee on top for our services, and then split the bill across the Laka community, our risk pool, basically, retroactively based on the actual cost of claims.
All right. So, but yeah. To concretely understand that you charge at the end of the month. So it's not like at the end of the year, because I was then already, okay, let me have 1 year of coverage. And then, you know, okay, so I really understand. So that really makes sense also from an actuary point of view, because otherwise you would have probably have, you know, solved magically the problem of insurance. But that's super interesting. But didn't that provide you and your actuaries a little bit a headache actually producing such a model?
So the fun fact is we don't need any actuaries for that, because we look to the back look backwards. So we only look backwards to how much have we settled in a month, and then we put the claims onto the customers, basically. So we have moved on from actuarial risk to payment default or payment risk. Our biggest business risk is that we pay out first and then people run away without settling their bill. In a credit-based society in the Western world, credit risk is well understood. A very bold statement was, if American Express can do it, we can do it, charging retroactively. And indeed, in a world where you can't get a mobile phone plan with a negative score on your Schufa or other records, people pay up effectively. And we have very high pay-up rates, so that works. It has been working for the past 3.5 years we've been live with. And of course, it comes with a lot of education, right? We literally had people commenting in our early days under our ads, an insurance proposition with no premiums up front that can't be right, must be a scam, avoid. So again, it's a bit of learning. We're getting better at explaining our proposition. But yes, people need to spend a minute or more on our proposition to understand it first. It's not too good to be true. And for that, we picked a very emotional product for them to cover, basically, in our first days.
Yes, I think emotion is a super interesting topic, because you did not only innovate on the business model, on, you know, abolishing actuaries. Sorry, guys, loved you very much. But actually, you also conquered the hearts and minds of a very sophisticated and a high quality target group, cycling enthusiasts. How did you actually plan to conquer them emotionally, or how did that happen?
So we had a few challenges. We had this idea that insurance can work upside down, that basically you charge at the end of the month retroactively rather than taking money first. And for that, we need the first use case. But then you go to the FCA, the regulator in the UK, and tell them that we have this new unique idea. There is no blueprint for that, aside from the mutuals, the farmers back in the days, Deloitte's names, for example, with all interesting pros and cons. But in the modern world, modern days, there is no blueprint for that, truly. So you go to the regulators and you tell them, hey, I have this idea. and they say, okay, you know what, cool idea, try it out. We were part of the regulatory fintech sandbox, so that really was a catalyst for us. Yeah. But totally, please choose a small enough use case, right? So the downside is not too high. And of course, in turn, we also need to work with insurance partners, incumbents to help us. And we were fortunate enough to find a good partner in Zurich Insurance Group in the UK who was curious enough to help us figure this out. And thinking back in the early days, we probably had some 40 insurance carriers who said, great idea, I'm in. I'll be your number two, though. Let someone else figure it out first, which was not really
helpful. Yeah, I know. This number two is really annoying. Yes, I'm doing it, but you know, later when that's proven, I'm like, duh, I'm here for the pilot, my friend, you know. I always say, don't worry, I come back, but I move the comma in the sum we talked about. Just one ride, don't worry. and we sometimes really do. All right, but I want to really go, this sounds super strategic, and so you're not a cyclist enthusiast yourself, obviously, or are you?
I'm getting more and more into it. I'm a cyclist, but not an enthusiast as others would claim they are. So I wouldn't do them any justice.
Yeah.
But again, it was a small enough use case to get into, and we're branching out rapidly from that. But I think it was a really good start because we had this very, very simple framework in our early days. It should be emotional. It should be of high value, and it should be community oriented for word of mouth. So people talk.
So we didn't want any. Before we go, sorry, but before we go into the expansion, and I have some hard questions for you prepared, don't worry. Let's focus again on this target group. So you are not a cyclist enthusiast yourself, saw a problem in your community and solved it, but you have a super strategic approach to pushing this new business innovation and trying it out in a certain target group that met these regulations and you know the risk reward concerning that innovation. Just wanted to make clear that the community and audience understands. By the way, dear audience, we have not seen a question from you yet. We see you on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Periscope, even our own website. You are out there. Please like, share this stream so everybody in insurance gets a chance to actually see it. And also hug your phone for once in a while that I heard this also helps. Tobias, how did you conquer the them emotionally? How did that happen?
So we need a small enough use case as mentioned. We had a small list, a short list based on the framework I mentioned. High emotional value, high actual value in community-oriented products that would rule out, let's say, something like a mobile phone, for example. Then we had, of course, some action sports. And to be fully frank and honest, we could have picked something completely different at that point in time. Okay. The idea was test in a niche, get the learnings through the door as hyper-focused as possible, and take the learnings and build from there. And it just happened to be that with cycling, we had the highest affinity of the products that we had in our shortlist. And we built from there, as mentioned.
So what I really just as for the audience to understand, you really have people who do not only insure their beloved high expensive or higher priced bike with Laka, but actually buy merchandise and fan clothes and take it on the ride. I mean, I don't know a lot of insurance companies who sell merch. I mean, a few do, but you really also from the design and how it all fits into the community. So I think that's super, super interesting. But let's talk about also a little bit of expansion. You have said you have a strategic approach. You put it into the niche. So the big question is, what's next?
So picking up on your previous point, Robin, if you don't mind, we have this bonkers idea, I think you have to call it. We want to build a lifestyle brand in insurance. So you see, basically, I'm fully branded, and so are our customers. And the idea behind that is you build a brand that customers love and can identify with, and they will buy more products than just bike insurance, for example. And that clearly works very well in a highly engaged community that the high-end enthusiast cyclists are, for example. And you put really the work in that, foster that community, and from here on you can branch out. So you mentioned the Laka shop that we have. For us, it is very much about vertical expansion. And that for me means where insurers traditionally are quite good at horizontal expansion. You take the motor policy, you then take the home insurance policy, and then you go on to buy an annuity or term life, whatever it might be. We go the other way around and rather look what else in the value chain is of value or importance to our customers. So a high-end cyclist, for example, the cycling clothing is really important. So we've partnered up with a brand called Rafa, which is often called the Louis Vuitton of cycling clothing. Very expensive, but of very high quality. They all have their own big fan base, which really helps. So now we have customers cycling in Rafa cycling jersey in the Laka pattern, Laka colors. It's always reverse marketing. They are paying to cycle around our clothing, basically, which makes me really happy, of course. But it's, again, about this community building in the background. And there's a lot more you can do around that.
Please share. What else can people, an insurer, do to make their brand more interesting?
So I won't give away my entire playbook at this point in time, at least. But what I want to share is around, we move very good, very often horizontally. Vertically, I see that more often if a motor insurer buys a body shop chain or something like that for the car repairs. But that is to lower costs. It's not necessarily to provide a better service to the customers. You see more and more attempts around that. But if I want to be bold, if we insure the bikes, why not do a bike holiday service, for example, right? Saga is an interesting example in the UK, at least pre-pandemic, if you want, insuring customers and offering cruise ship trips as well. That sort of makes sense, again, in a different macro world. But you have a captive audience, and you know their taste, you know what they like. Why not trying to capture that? And if they trust you and you provide value-added services, so again, there's a very thin or thick line rather between value-added services and ripping someone off. But if you give good value for money in a trusted brand, you can monetize more than once, provide more services than once, and you create this 360 loop, basically. The customers won't leave, right? In our world, in bikes, why not getting deeper into the e-commerce world, right? We have thousands of a captive audience. Why not trying to provide more services here? If you insure bikes, if you sell bikes, why not finance the bikes in between and all the good stuff? Yeah. So we're trying to create this 360 feeling for our customers.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting because, and by the way, just for the audience out there, it's not that I told Tobias to tell these things because I have been over the last years like tirelessly talking about we need to make it more emotional. We actually have communities in certain segments of our society, and even not protecting your family, financial freedom, financial literacy, financial responsibility, building up wealth. All these are topics, even if you don't have a small a niche, you can still go there. So I'm really... I'm really happy to see such a successful use case. We see in classical car insurance also something like that happening right now in Germany. So it's super exciting to see that that's possible and to see use cases where you actually do it and where that really works, because I think we need more use cases to really show that, because I think insurance is too important that people don't like it. That was the question concerning the how you made your audience fall in love with you. But my question actually was, what would be your next audience in the list you had thought about?
So to make it really exciting, we have three dimensions we are expanding across. So we talked about the vertical expansion on the product side, moving away from insurance, offering more insurance and non-insurance products. I think that's a key bit for us to monetize more deeply. The second one for us truly is expanding our customer base. So traditionally, in our young days, people would look at Laka, think of it as a high-end enthusiast cycling brand, but we are much more than that. So about a year ago, we rebranded to really put emphasis on that. We are focusing a lot on mobility as a theme. Mobility for me means city cyclists, commuters, cargo bikes, and the like. That's a really important growing sector. We can't wait for the big rush back to the office. And I'm sure many of the viewers feel the same way. And of course, then we're moving on to e-mobility, for example. So we already covered the e-bikes. There are so many more interesting use cases. E-cargo bikes, e-scooters, e-mopeds could be all interesting for us. We really want to position ourselves in the green mobility, the green revolution mobility provider. Cool. And any case in between is fair game for us. So that's really our sweet spot. And one thing I'm personally super excited about, and that probably is our biggest proof point to prove that we are not just in the enthusiast space, we have made a really good push in the commercial area as well. And we've partnered up with some really interesting partners, one being of the largest e-cargo bikes manufacturers. So an actual sub customer is Lola's Cupcakes, buys a couple of e-cargo bikes, delivers the food to this from the store to the customers. And in a world where cities more close the inner cities for vans because of emissions, basically, the e-cargo bike will be one of the predominant vehicles of the future in inner cities for transportation, for example. And we want to play a very important role here. But it goes further than that. And then actually only this week, so it's very young, we didn't even have time to put a press release out. But Laka is now the official partner, and we are ensuring a whole fleet of a food delivery network in the UK. So thousands of riders bringing food to your home are now covered by Laka, which is super exciting. We want to be there for all mobility users. Green mobility is the buzzword, so to speak.
And,
I
think what's super interesting is there you have been super successful in the B2C space, which is hard enough, and you have mastered, I think, especially going to that niche, which I think learnings can also apply to other customer segments. But what I think it's super interesting, you have the B2C case here, and now you have a B2B case here, which is a totally different business model. And also, I think you and your investors probably are super happy that you proved that point that you can do both, which is super, super hard to do that.
Robin, one thought on that. The interesting bit for me here is the supply chain behind, because if a B2B use case bike gets stolen or a B2C bike gets stolen, it's probably the same supplier in the background we can source the bikes from. So you can, again, in this attempt to go more vertical, if a bike gets stolen, damaged, it's the same supply chain we're tapping in, getting deeper and deeper, sourcing the bikes ourselves. And if you spin that further a few years, we might be one of the biggest buyers of bikes or bike parts across the globe, basically, by virtue of focusing on this one large segment.
Which is, I think, it illustrates what I always say to insurers, you need to think about expanding your value chain, because chain, again, very German accent, your value chain. Why? Because insurers are, in the end, the one-trick pony. Are we just, we're just covering risk, which is, of course, segments. And I understand we have different products in life, health and P&C are different. I understand that. But if you think in a meta level, you know, it is a one trick pony. And you, if you, I think that's super risky. And it's ironic that an insurance that's super great at managing risk is very bad at seeing or estimating that. And what you do is actually you're expanding your value chain and making you more independent. So if at one point you're maybe the biggest bike wholesaler or company in the UK, even though you know your insurance business is not maybe so important, and when there's a disruption unit, you are not getting hit so badly. Decision makers in the insurance industry and subject matter experts, I mean, you know, we have a lot of smart people there. What could you tell you from your experience at Laka, where you may put things into reality? What is your tip for people at incumbents? Can be startups, can be tech companies, can be service providers, can be insurance professionals. What is your tip how to actually do it? Not only talk about it, but do it like you did at Laka.
I'm obviously not in their shoes. It's a really challenging task, no doubt, so kudos. But nonetheless, the one thing that works well for us is experimenting. And experimenting is very difficult in a regulated world. But isolating a team or a pocket of risk capital or whatnot else and trying as much as can, make failure part of the KPIs, because otherwise people won't try enough. One thing, sadly, I've seen is a few attempts of incumbents trying to innovate with own in-house brands. And after 2 years, they shut it down because it doesn't deliver millions of premiums. It sadly takes a little bit longer than this. Incentivize the staff running with it. Maybe there's a way for profit, revenue, or equity share for the staff to have long-term incentives along the way. But we don't know what works until we try. And obviously, the setup costs are very, very high in insurance. So again, speaking for myself, experimenting works. We have a whole list of things that didn't work. And I think the hardest bit is to shutting down promising ideas because they don't get traction fast enough. But I would hope that we see a lot more experiments along the way.
Super, super interesting. I agree. But what I see in the industry currently is that you have mid-size and smaller, but also larger players led by bolder people that, you know, foster failure culture, not only like a buzzword, but in reality. And and you see a differentiation in the market slowly. You can see this in who was able to continue to do business despite of COVID. You see this in who is growing over market average. And there are some cases that did great jobs when it came to that. You're now in the UK. I heard there are also bike enthusiasts in Europe, you know, for example, me. Are you thinking about jumping over the channel?
So I mentioned how we were viewed in the beginning as a small niche player in the enthusiast game. So one thing for us was, of course, to branch out across products and segments. The third piece of the puzzle for us is geographic expansion. And for that, we have shed a lot of blood, sweat, and tears last year and obtained our own license in the Netherlands. So we're now actually live in the Netherlands.
It's
the mother country of cycling, of course. I'm sure many of you know the facts, but 17 million Dutch people own 23 million bikes. So it's just phenomenal. Every single person literally is a potential customer for us there. And being live there is really, really important for us for the learnings. In the UK, we are a lot more on the leisure cycling side with the commercial and the mobility use case catching up. In the Netherlands, cycling is just way of life. There is nobody's a cyclist. People are just people that kind of get from A to B and go their way. So Netherlands was the first starting point for us, also in the post-Brexit world, to get access to a single market. And indeed, Europe is our target, eventually beyond Europe, but for the time being, definitely any European country is fair game. So we're looking closely what comes next after the Netherlands, that's now picking up in traction. And of course, because of my heritage, being German, Germany is there's no way around it. And if you look at the numbers in terms of e-bikes sold, for example, how many households now have one or two e-bikes, phenomenal. So most certainly it's a market for us. But of course, we keep a very close eye at other European countries as well, which is really exciting for us.
All right. I'm also happy that you are in the Holland, not only because our Insurance and Finance live show will have a Dutch vertical, a Dutch special. We have a Dutch series together with the Association of Dutch Insurers. I'm super excited about that, but also because I'm half Dutch myself and I choose my geographic expansions out of silly reasons. You know, Netherlands is also one of them. Why? Because then I can travel there more and get my childhood cookies. So that's one. And we also have some where the sun is a little bit warmer and more often shines than in Germany. That's another strategic move we're going to do, but I'm not going to share that so soon. Guys out there watching, you have not asked a single question. A possibility, technically, it's not possible in an SM bug, or you're too shy. That's okay. Tobias, don't worry. We also had a show with the leader of the BaFin, the German Insurance Supervision Authority. We had a lot of people watching, but nobody dared to ask a question, which was quite funny. And we made fun during the show about that. So you're in good company when it comes to that. If you guys have a question to Tobias and you watch this after the show's live, don't hesitate to comment in this section. Thank you very much for sharing all of this. Is there anything the audience can do for you?
Insure your bikes, dealing with Laka. If you have any angles, any ways you think we could partner up, please do reach out. Again, any European territory is fair game for us. We're looking for distribution channels as any good insurance intermediary would. Partnering up left, right, and center. So please do reach out. Would love to keep talking.
Thank you very much, Tobias. Thank you very much, guys out there. Make sure to tune in tomorrow, because tomorrow we have our UK special. Our UK special is with Group Digital Transformation Officer of Swiss Re, Pravina Latva, and our co-host is Richard Sahal, nobody less than the founder, CEO, and mastermind behind FinTech and InsurTech Global. Tobias, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Robin. It was a pleasure.